Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
College football season may officially be over, but there's still news. And of course, we're moving toward the combine and then all the workouts for the top teams and the top schools who are trying to showcase their prospects for the NFL. And finally, we'll get to the NFL draft. Now, that's not the only thing going on in college football, but it's certainly what we've been focused on, right? Especially that decision by Kyler Murray to declare for the NFL draft and keep his options open when it comes to either baseball or football. So on the heels of that, what do we get on Wednesday? Well, Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts will replace Kyler Murray at Oklahoma. Because I guarantee you, Jalen is not leaving Alabama to go to Norman, Oklahoma, and be a backup quarterback. So now Lincoln Riley will go from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray, both of whom won Heisman trophies. And now Jalen Hurts. Jalen makes his decision and announces it on the Players Tribune website. I've decided to take my talents to the University of Oklahoma, where I will continue my development as both a quarterback and as a student. I'm very fortunate to have this opportunity, and I'm excited for the journey ahead. And because he's already graduated with his undergrad degree, he's now a grad student, which means he can play right away. 1 year of eligibility left for the former Alabama QB with a 26-2 record as a starting quarterback for the Crimson Tide. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I don't know if Oklahoma fans are excited how Alabama fans feel about it. At least he doesn't have to change his entire wardrobe. He goes from the Crimson Tide to the Crimson and Cream. Those are the colors that OU wears. And this fascinates me. Lincoln Riley, if you look at Baker Mayfield and then Kyler Murray, and now Jalen Hurts, is willing to take on any style of quarterback and believes that he can tailor an offense around Jalen. Now, Kyler is a dual threat quarterback. And while Jalen, I think many would point to him and say he's a dual threat guy, he's obviously a better running quarterback than he is a passing QB. Now, he can pass. I'm not saying he can't complete a pass, but that's not his strength. Whereas with Kyler Murray, he can whip the ball all over the field. He can hurt you a variety of ways. This is amazing that Lincoln Riley is going to have a third consecutive season with a different quarterback. And what are the chances that we end up seeing Jalen Hurts at the Heisman Trophy ceremony come next December? He's very athletic. He obviously has the heart of a champion. He's a leader. He's got incredible character. I will always be a big fan for the way he handled what was a demotion at Alabama. Lost his job very publicly in the national championship against Clemson a year ago, but did not leave. Wanted to graduate from Alabama, wanted to finish his degree, wanted to support Tua, was devoted to Nick Saban and his teammates, and wanted to finish what he started. And what does he get? He gets that moment in the SEC championship in which it is a role reversal. And instead of Tua finishing out the game in place of Jalen, it's the opposite. Tua gets hurt. The Crimson Tide are trailing Georgia in that SEC championship. Jalen comes in the game and leads them to an epic comeback. I don't know that I've ever been happier for an athlete because he did it the right way. And yes, Lincoln Riley is getting an athletic talent, a leader, an experienced quarterback. But if you think about Oklahoma as a whole, to add a young man with that kind of heart, with that kind of mind, with that kind of will and determination, that kind of loyalty, it's not just about the football. Though I'm excited to see what Jalen will do as a Sooner. It's just weird though, right? Oklahoma, Alabama, two of the top teams in the country. When do you often see one leave and go to the other? And also, think about the difference between SEC football and Big 12 football. We had just talked to Dane Brugler, an NFL draft analyst with The Athletic, about Kyler Murray and how he's a product of the Big 12 where they don't play defense. Here's Jalen Hurts, who's faced tough physical defenses in the SEC and has been on that stage over and over again. He's an accomplished quarterback from his own conference to the national stage. He's won individual awards. He's lost very little. How much will Oklahoma benefit from having him as an addition to the program? And so I'd love to hear the reaction from college football fans, Sooner fans, as well as Bama fans. Are you wishing him well? Because Tua is obviously the quarterback going forward, though Jalen did play this year. He got his moment in the SEC championship. He did play. It wasn't a dynamic duo, so to speak. It was Tua's team. It is Tua's team. But there were times when Nick Saban used Jalen's skill set and put him in games. As you can imagine, though, Jalen having 1 year of eligibility left wants to go out and use that last year of eligibility and play as much as he can. And honestly, I'll repeat it again, I just admire him so much for not leaving, not ditching when things all went south. And I've told you this story before. It sticks with me. Every time I talk about Jalen Hurts, I want to share this. Following the national championship victory over Clemson in January of 2018, he was in his hotel room with his parents, and he's crying. Because he realizes he just lost his starting job and he's not likely to get it back. As much as there was a competition and a controversy until the season kicked off just a few months ago. So he's crying and he says to his parents, "What am I going to do now? What are we going to do now?" And his dad says, "We're going to fight." And he did. And he didn't run and he stayed there. And he never said a negative word about Tua or the program or his coaches. He stayed ready. He did have to fight through an injury. Remember, he had an ankle surgery that he had? He had maybe it was a knee surgery. He had a minor surgery in the course of the season. And those are the only games he wasn't available for. But he made the program better. He got Alabama to the point at which it was back in the national championship game because of his leadership and because of his support of Tua. And Nick Saban raves about him. And so I have no doubt that Coach Saban sends him off to Oklahoma with nothing but a blessing. Like, yeah, go play. You only have a limited time to do this, so go. Go leave your mark on another program. Also, can I just sign up now for another OU-Alabama matchup? I don't know if it's going to work out that way. Who knows? But in the college football playoff, if you told me right now it was going to be Oklahoma and Alabama, I'd take it. They are forever linked in 2018 and 19, to be sure. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. As well as on Twitter, A-Law Radio. You're sending me your responses about the most hated team in sports. Boogie Cousins believes it's the Warriors. I'm asking you what other franchises deserve that label. And I'm also telling you, think about our show last week. It's going to be the same teams, many of the same teams that we served up as America's team. The two things go hand in hand. Let's talk to Anthony, who's in Oklahoma City. Welcome to After Hours.
Hello, Amy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Hey, I know that you have some Oklahoma ties, correct?
I do. I spent 4 years there earlier in my career.
Yeah, correct. Okay, so I said, I listen to you a lot, you know, because I work nights. I guess I have not been able to call in, but I do like your show. You do a great job.
Thank you.
Now, as far as Jalen Hurts, I talked to a couple of my friends before he was going to sign with OU, and I told them that he was going to sign with OU, and they thought that I was crazy. And I'm like, no, listen, he's going to, because, I mean, it's a perfect match. You know, now, granted, you know, he might not have the arm strength, but when he came into the – well, that's what I thought. But when he came into the game to play Georgia, mm-hmm. I mean, he was throwing 60 yards down the field, you know. So what it is, it's like he has improved, and that's what we have coaching. And also with him coming here into OU, I mean, look, we have now, you know, two Heisman quarterbacks. Now, will he win another Heisman for OU? I don't know, but I guarantee that he will be in New York. And also, once again, I mean, it's all about, you know, his character. That's why I like him, because, I mean, I used to play football, and, you know, I mean, if that would happen to me, I would have probably, you know, walked off the field and kept walking to the locker room, you know? So, I mean, he is a good person. He's very mature for his age. But I look forward to him coming to OU. And like I said, I mean, once again, it's a perfect fit. Now, we are losing a couple, you know, offensive linemen, but, I mean, it didn't matter who would come in here. We still, you know, lose those linemen because, you know, it's going pro. And once again, it's like, I mean, if it's not going to be Jalen, who is it going to be? Mm. I mean, so, you know, you want to go with, you know, the best person that you can get, and that is Jalen. So, once again, you do a great job, and go Oklahoma, and, you know, need to come back down here and see us here for a little while, you know. So, you have a good night, Amy.
Thanks, Anthony. I appreciate that phone call and the kind words. I haven't been to Oklahoma in about a year and a half. I was there in the summer of 2017 to visit some friends of mine in the Woodward area who had taken me in when I was in between jobs before I moved to Oklahoma City. And they were so kind to me, and they were celebrating their, what's that, 50th wedding anniversary, I believe. 50 or it might have been their 60th wedding anniversary. But I just wanted to be there because I hadn't seen them in such a long time. I also ran the Oklahoma City Memorial Half Marathon. That was my very first half marathon going back to, I think it would have been 2016 now, and I really enjoyed that experience as well. So Oklahoma will always have a special place in my heart. Anthony brought up, if not Jalen, then who? Well, this part is interesting. Spencer Rattler, you may not all know that name, but he is the number one ranked dual threat quarterback and was a highly ranked prospect for the class of 2019. He actually signed with Oklahoma in December during the early signing period. Remember, they moved it up. It used to be in February, and they moved it to December right after the bowl season, and actually right in the middle of the bowl season. And so Spencer signed with Oklahoma, and let's see, I think it was ESPN that got in touch with Spencer's dad, and he said, yeah, we know about Jalen Hurts transferring, and that his son is still planning to attend OU, and that he actually, his dad went on to say, Jalen's a great young man. Spence is looking forward to competing and learning from him. And so maybe this is one way that Lincoln Riley can get Spencer then prepared to take over. But just the idea that Riley, Coach Riley, in now what will be his third year since he took over as head coach when Bob Stoops retired. And Stoops did it so that Lincoln Riley could move up to that head coaching spot. Think about the transfer quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and now Jalen Hurts. And if you're wondering, Hurts also visited Miami. So that was one of the other schools he visited officially. And he got interest from Auburn, Tennessee. Could you imagine that? From Alabama to Auburn. Ugh. Auburn, Tennessee, also in the SEC. Utah, UCLA, Florida State, and Ohio State. So those were a group of other schools that were interested in having Jalen transfer. His kind of experience and leadership and winning record, that is a rare combination. And regardless of his skill set, he's the kind of guy you want in your program and you're willing to design your offense around. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. If you have a reaction to Jalen Hurts leaving Alabama, wearing a different kind of crimson, that's the crimson and cream with Oklahoma, again, either on Twitter or on Facebook. And then we're asking you the most hated team in sports. And there's a spot both on Twitter and Facebook that you can respond. We'll work to more of your phone calls as well, 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Draymond quickly to the front court. Finds a hot hand. It's Curry. Curry off a series of drag screens. Top of the key. Three. Are you kidding me? Anthony Davis right in front of him. but he's Steph Curry. The laws of man don't apply. Curry with the ball, guarded by Mirotić on a switch. Backed it up toward the Oracle Arena sign on the right wing. Between the legs, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Crossover, head fake, dribble drive. Curry, slow motion, off glass, and good with the right hand. 136-128. Curry now with 37.
We were trying to get over the hump, and they were playing it out of their mind, you know, across the board, bringing it to us all night. So it was obviously necessary. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, that unit that started the game, they kept the momentum going, got us a lead, and we took it from there.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Another incredible night for the Golden State Warriors. The 147 points as they beat the Pelicans. And this is coming off that victory over the Denver Nuggets. And Steph Curry, a third straight game with at least 8 made threes. On this night, he was 9 of 17, perfect from the free throw line, 41 points for him. And the Warriors are now a game up. When you look at the standings, it's a game lead over the Nuggets in the West. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Tim Roy is the play-by-play voice of the Warriors on their radio network. We're asking you, who is the most hated team in sports? And again, I would refer you to our show last week in which we talked about America's team. And a lot of the same names that you sent me a week ago are the ones that I'm seeing now on social media for the most hated team. And I keep trying to get you to understand this. The hate is actually jealousy, which is why the most hated teams in sports are the ones that are the most successful and have the word dynasty thrown around. 855-212-4227. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. If you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, you can get it all at geico.com. We got the same kind of calls. Oh, it's the Patriots. I can make a case for the Golden State Warriors. It's the Warriors. It's the Yankees. Here's a new one that I'm seeing on social media, though, for the most hated teams in sports. And that would be the Pittsburgh Penguins. And sometimes, and it's not just about their success, because of course they've had success ever since Sidney Crosby got into the league, but it's also, as some of you have pointed out, because he gets all the calls. I mean, again, that tends to happen when you are a superstar. The officials are watching you more often, and so you're getting more of the calls because they've got their eyes on you, like the eyes of Adam Gase. The eyes of Adam Gase are watching you if your mark is Sidney Crosby or if you're matched up with James Harden. I feel sorry for you.
I got these fresh eyes.
I can't get over it. Do you know I almost ended my weekly column with the eyes of Adam Gase are watching you? And then I thought, A, my editor wouldn't allow it to go. He would take it out. Although I probably could have fought for it. But B, I thought, is that too snarky? Should I let it go? But I'm still hung up on the eyes of Adam Gase. So some of you are saying the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I can see that element for sure. Let's see. Greg on Twitter, the most hated teams are the Patriots, the Cowboys, the Yankees, and the Penguins. Rod says the Pats, the Cowboys, the Warriors. Again, these are all teams that you submitted to me last week that would use the label as America's team. And this is really my whole point of bringing it up. We don't need to do an entire show on how the Patriots, the Warriors, the Cowboys are the most hated teams in sports. I'm doing this to prove a point, is that they're hated because they're successful. They're hated because the rest of the fans in the country are tired of hearing about them. They're hated, quote unquote, because you're jealous. And so the America's team element, which is the sustained success, the superstars that transcend the sport, the jersey and memorabilia sales, the fact that they can go on the road in other arenas or other stadiums and get not only their fans, but other fans in the area to show up. All of these things, higher Q rating, better TV ratings. They're a team that transcends just the hardcore sports fan and they become known to the casual sports fans. Those are all things that make them America's teams. But that success then breeds animosity. That success breeds envy, which is where they get to the point where they're the most hated team as well. So I wanted you to kind of see the dichotomy and how it's yin and yang, actually. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, our phone number, 855-212-4227. You've got Facebook as well. Coming up, excited to talk to author and historian Gary Pomerantz. He's got a brand new book out called The Last Pass. It's about the Celtics of the 60s, but it's not actually about the basketball. He'll explain when he joins us. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Kyrie, offensive end, lobs it. Horford, catch and slam with two hands. The perfect exclamation point on a mid-season win the Boston Celtics could not have needed any more.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Kyrie Irving is the offensive point guard running the Celtics today, as you hear with Sean Grandy on the radio network after they beat the Toronto Raptors. But it was Bob Cousy back in the 60s, late 50s, early 60s. And the Celtics dynasty really became one of lore when Bill Russell joined the team. But that was the 60s when it wasn't all about basketball. And our next guest has written a book called The Last Pass about Bob Cousy, Bill Russell, the Celtics, and what matters in the end. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Gary Pomerantz joining us now from the Bay Area, where he is a lecturer at Stanford and an author of 6 nonfiction books, this latest one being about the Celtics of the 60s. Gary, I am fascinated by the amount of time you spent with Bob Cousy and how open he was with you. And you talk about him being introspective and really opening up. What was it like to sit down with him for hours and hours as he unloads his history on you?
Well, it was a fascinating experience. It was so compelling. You know, originally I had thought I was going to do a broader piece on the Celtic dynasty, but all of that changed after my first interview with Cousy. You know, I flew to Boston and I drove to Worcester, Mass, where Bob has lived for the last, 72 years since he went to school at Holy Cross back in the 1940s. And, when the door opened, it was an 87-year-old man standing there holding a wooden cane. We sat down in his living room that day for 4 hours. And he was alternately introspective and funny, and most of all, he was emotional and intense. He was all in, just as he had been as a player with the Boston Celtics all those years ago. And it was very clear to me from that first four-hour interview that he had much in his thoughts and in his heart about Bill Russell. And, he had a few regrets about their time in those 7 years as teammates.
And you write a lot about the regrets. One of the biggest, though, the one that's I feel like it makes the greatest impact, is about how he didn't do more to stand up for his teammate and to try to speak to the fans about the way they were treating him. What did he have to say about what it was like to be Bill Russell back then?
Well, I think people, today tend to forget who Bob Cousy was. I mean, he's sort of the Alexander Hamilton of the NBA. You know, Hamilton, the founding father, sort of forgotten, lost to time. And this is what's been happening in basketball with Cousy. You know, he's sliding down the list of the NBA's all-time greatest players, more modern players replacing him, because people don't remember who he was and what he did. You know, he was the Houdini of the hardwood playing, in the 50s and into the early 1960s. He was the first guy to regularly take the ball behind his back and throw the no-look passes. In every imaginative move made today by Steph Curry and Kyrie Irving and James Harden, there's a little bit of Cousy flowing through it. And when Bill Russell came in, Bob Cousy had never met an African-American teammate quite like him. You know, Cousy, it's important to remember, was seen as one of the good guys by the league's early African-American players. He roomed in 1950 with Chuck Cooper, the first black player drafted by not only the Celtics, but by any NBA team. And this is only 3 years after Jackie Robinson desegregated baseball. And Cousy and Cooper became great friends. They went to clubs together and socialized. Their wives were friends. Russell comes in the December of 1956, And he's a little different than Chuck Cooper and Don Barksdale, who were role players. Russell quickly, you know, becomes a star. Mm. And not only that, he calls out racism where he sees it. And so he and Cousy are teammates for those 7 years. They win six NBA championships. And, you know, this is between 56 and 63 when the South is aboil with racial turmoil, racial flashpoints. And as Cousy related it to me in these interviews, you know, he and Russell were almost like business associates. They got along incredibly well on the court. They were perfectly interlocking pieces. But in the locker room, you know, they talk about the game, the usual locker room banter, but almost never about their personal lives or civil rights. And I think it's important, particularly for your younger listeners, you know, to know that Russell went through searing racism in those years with the Celtics, in Boston and around the NBA. In St. Louis, for instance, you know, now we call them the Atlanta Hawks, but back in the late 50s, they were the St. Louis Hawks. And when the Celtics were playing in Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis, fans there would scream at Russell, baboon, black gorilla, horrid, racist stuff. And in Reading, Massachusetts, a suburb of Boston, where Russell and his young family lived, police would eye Russell suspiciously as he drove through town. And once vandals broke in and shattered his trophy case and spray-painted racist graffiti on his wall and defecated on his bed. So this is the kind of stuff that Russell faced, and no wonder he would say many times, I didn't play for Boston, I played for the Celtics.
Mm. Gary Pomerantz is a historian and a Stanford University lecturer, and his latest book is called The Last Pass, about Bob Cousy, Bill Russell, the Celtics, and What Matters in the End, which is the subtitle underneath the Last Pass. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Did you talk to Bill Russell for the book?
Tried to. Tried hard. The answer is no, I did not. I went, you know, tried through the Celtics, through the NBA, through some of his teammates. And, you know, Cousy has had an uneasiness about his relationship with Bill Russell for years. In The Last Pass, the title of the book, refers to a letter that Cousy wrote in February 2016 to Russell. It was a mea culpa letter, an apology. Cousy formally handwriting, page and a half long, a letter to Russell saying that he should have done more when they were teammates together, and he takes the blame for that, and he apologized for it and wishes they had been closer in the decades since. And, you know, he sent the letter and waited, and he didn't hear from Russell for a year. 2 years passed.
Wow.
2.5 years passed when August 2018, you know, 5 months ago, Cousy gets a call on a Sunday night, and he looks on his phone, caller ID, and sees it's coming from the Seattle area, and he picks up the phone and says hello, and he hears a voice sort of old and enfeebled say, Bob, it's Bill Russell. I'm calling to see how you're doing.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was an emotional call, and, you know, I say that they're the Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig of this great dynasty, but we know that Ruth and Gehrig died young. They didn't have the chance to gather and talk as old men about what it all meant with the, you know, Murderers Row Yankees. But here are the Ruth and Gehrig of the Celtics dynasty with Russell and Cousy, and they did have a chance to have this conversation. They talked 10, 12 minutes, and you know, for Cousy, I can tell you that he appreciated that phone call. He had closed that circle with the writing of the letter.
What made you decide to write about this particular relationship? And I know you said your focus changed a little bit, but this relationship, these Celtics, why did you pick them?
Well, you know, my last book was about a different dynasty, the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 1970s. Franco Harris, Terry Bradshaw, Mean Joe Green, also the team of Mike Webster, the first player diagnosed with CTE. So that a huge legacy in football, really a book about football's gifts and costs. And I started to think, you know, what would be a companion piece? What if I wrote about another dynasty? And I thought about baseball. Well, the Yankees are the 20s or 40s into the 50s, but most of those players are long gone. And then I thought basketball. Well, these Celtics from 1957 to 1969 won 11 NBA championships in 13 seasons. 11 in 13 seasons. I mean, the Lakers of Pat Riley's generation used to talk about three-peat. Well, just, you know, imagine in the fall of 1966, the Celtics were going for a nine-peat. I mean, they'd won eight in a row. That's dominance. And when I started to think about all these players, you know, Cousy, Russell, Tommy Heinsohn, John Havlicek, Sam Jones, Thad Sanders, Casey Jones, they were all still alive. And I thought how wonderful it would be to capture this team, you know, in the twilight when they're in their 70s and 80s. And as I say, Cousy is now 90, where you know, could really explore not only the games, but what it all meant. And in the end, what matters most are the teammates.
Gary Pomerantz's latest book is called The Last Pass, about Bob Cousy, Bill Russell, the Celtics relationship, and a different era in sports and in society. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I read an interview that you did about the book and about the process of writing about the book. And in it, you answered a question about talking to Bob Cousy, about his regrets and how that actually stirred up a memory in your own life about how you saw racism directed at an athlete when you were a young sports writer. What was that like for you, Gary?
Well, you know, in 1983, I was a 22-year-old sports writer for the Washington Post, and I was covering a Big East basketball game at the Palestra between Villanova and Georgetown. Georgetown star was a sophomore center by the name of Patrick Ewing. He's now the head coach of Georgetown. And Ewing, 7 foot tall, from Jamaica, the star of the team, was the object of taunts during that season. Fans would be in opposing arenas, would hold up signs that said, you know, Ewing can't read. Well, on this night in the Palestra, which, if you've been there, Amy, you know, I mean, it's like a shoebox-sized arena, and the
right.
Fans are sort of right over the court. As pregame introductions were starting up, I noticed across the court the Villanova students unfurling this bedsheet banner. And it didn't say, Ewing can't read. This one said, Ewing is an ape. And as Patrick was announced and started to run onto the court for pregame introductions from out of the crowd, from behind where I was sitting, a banana peel landed at his feet. So what may have begun is, you know, college humor crosses over into coarse racism. And as a young sports writer, I was there to cover the game, and I'm ashamed to admit that I didn't write about the banner or the banana peel. I wrote about this game, and I came back days later and did a story interviewing everyone about the banana peel and the bedsheet banner. But wow, I just can't believe that I missed the story, because I can tell you this, Amy, I can't tell you a darn thing about the game that night,
right.
But I remember the words on the banner, and I remember the banana peel landing on the floor, and that night I missed the story. And so that's a regret for me, and you know, it came from my work with Cousy, when Cousy's talking about his regret about not having spoken out against the racism Russell was saying. Because he was Bob Cousy, people would have listened. He wishes he'd done that. Cousy also wishes that as captain of the Celtics, which he was for 13 seasons, that he pulled Russell aside and said, Russ, I've got your back. But he didn't do that, and that's the source of his regrets.
Gary, I appreciate you so much sharing that personal memory with us. You can find Gary on Twitter at Gary M. Pomerantz. He's author of The Last Pass, his latest book about Cousy, Russell, the Celtics, and what matters in the end, and all that time spent with Bob Cousy. Can't wait to read the rest of it. Gary, thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Oh, it's fun to talk with you, Amy. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.